At U.S. Bank, when we say we're in it with you, we mean it. Not just for the good stuff, the grand openings and celebrations, although those are pretty great, but for all the hard work it took to get there, the fine-tuning of goals, the managing of cash and workflows, and decision-making. We're in to help you through all of it, because together, we're proving day in and day out that there is nothing as powerful as the power of us. Visit usbank.com to get started today. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Copyright 2024 U.S. Bank.
T-Mobile 5G internet keeps getting better. Boost your connection to harder to reach places with home internet plus and get internet right where you want it.
With Wi-Fi that reaches the attic, I finally have a home office.
Get a free upgrade to T-Mobile home internet plus while supplies last. Home internet plus starts at $50 a month with auto pay and any voice line. Check availability at T-Mobile.com/home internet.
During congestion, customers on this plan may notice speeds lower than other customers and further reductions using greater than 1.2 terabytes per month due to data prioritization. After $20 bill credit plus $5 per month without auto pay, debit or bank account required. Regulatory fees included for qualifying accounts. $35 connection charge applies.
Hello, Nate DiMeo, host and creator of the Memory Palace podcast. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm good. I wonder if we can start today by going to the Club Baghdad. Take me there.
This is a nightclub that my grandfather and his brother owned in Cranston, Rhode Island, which is just over the Providence border, just a mere 15 minutes away. It was a nightclub that they owned from the late 30s up until just a little bit after World War II. At this nightclub, they would get sort of, you know, like second and third tier touring acts. You know, the bigger acts would go up to Boston or to Hartford or whatever, but some people would stop here at the Club Baghdad. A story that I tell in my book is the origin story, you know, of my mom's arm of the family tree, which is there was like the flu was going through and a number of the showgirls took ill. And he called up to a temp agency, a showgirl temp agency, some sort of talent agency up in Boston, and said, like, hey, I need a couple of girls. We have a big Christmas show coming. Can you send some down? And my grandmother, Barbara, was one of the showgirls that they sent down that night. So my grandmother met my grandfather and fell in love under the Christmas lights of the Club Baghdad one Christmas, probably about 1940.
And it seems like the Club Baghdad closed long before you were born. It seems like you didn't get the chance to see it with your own eyes.
No, I never did. And it burned down in the late 1940s and they're under suspicious circumstances. It was probably burned down by the mob. The Club Baghdad, as was always told in these stories that my grandfather would tell and my family would tell sort of around their kitchen table, you know, really became this kind of like magical place of memory. You know, it was the sort of like Xanadu of the mind. But now that it's been gone, it only existed in their memories. And then it existed as this sort of like, as this kind of fictional construct, you know, that is grounded in the real, but that existed in me then and exists in me still.
I'm Amanda McGowan, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. And today I'm speaking with Nate DiMeo, the host and creator of the podcast The Memory Palace, which conjures lost moments and forgotten figures from America's past. Nate is also now the author of a book of Memory Palace stories. Maybe we can think of this quick trip we just took to Club Baghdad as a sort of antechamber, or like the jet bridge for today's episode, because now Nate is going to take us inside of his own personal memory palace. It's a journey in three rooms, from a beloved family home, to a cluttered museum storage unit, to a one-of-a-kind collection of super lifelike glass flowers. Okay, room number one. So the Baghdad Club may have closed way before Nate was born, but a lot of stuff from the club and other family memorabilia all ended up in their house in Providence on Pierce Street. Nate spent a lot of time in that house when he was a kid, visiting his grandparents. And then after a short stint to California, he ended up coming back to Providence and living in that house for a while when he was in his 20s.
Here I was back in this really beloved space. It was a wonderful thing because not only was it rent free, you know, it was...
That's key.
It was, yes. And so this was a house, you know, that was filled with, that was filled kind of with ghosts, but it was also filled with the artifacts, you know, of my mom's life and her sister's lives that, you know, there were still in the bedrooms that they used to occupy that were now guest rooms or my grandmother's sewing room. You know, there were still things like yearbooks and, you know, roller skate keys or whatever, you know, all the like stuff of their lives. And you dig deeper and there were the stuff of my grandfather's life. You know, there was a wallet that had old bus passes and his old union card and all of these things, you know, up in the attic or down in the basement. There was just the detritus of these lives. The thing that is just like sort of entirely formative to the work that I do in the Memory Palace is this sense that I got living in that place of my own time, my own history taking place in this space that other people's history unfurled in the way that our lives in a city or our lives in a family kind of like layer on top of each other. And I find that I've never shaken the just kind of like strangeness and wonder of that. And in that house and walking around Providence, you know, to and from that house was where I first was struck by that wonder, and it's never left.
So you mentioned, you know, you came back to the Pierce Street house. You were living there when you were in your early 20s. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you sort of became the unofficial archivist of the family. Like people would call you up and be like, where's that thing in the basement? Can you find it? Are there any things that like come to mind that you pulled out of the bowels of the house?
There are a few like kind of treasured objects that I have from the house. There's one that's really specific and very Memory Palace, which is at one point in a drawer that used to be in my aunt's room that was where my grandmother's sewing machine was. At the bottom of a drawer, I found a rolled up drawing. And it was a pastel drawing that was done by some itinerant artist, like some guy who clearly like came up to like, you know, my grandmother on the street or as I saw like in the detail, like at some nightclub, you know, and like, hey, let me draw your picture, lady. And you look lovely and that kind of thing. And so it's this really lovely in every way drawing of my very pretty grandmother.
Oh.
But the thing that made it more magic to me was the story that it was attached to it. Cause I went to her and I said, hey, I found this like really cool thing. And she's like, oh, let me tell you about that. And she said, well, your grandfather, you know, had this other girlfriend and she, you know, another showgirl. There was the showgirl Dottie that we were kind of in conflict over, you know, Ray's affection. And, you know, Dottie was the one who was age appropriate because Ray was 11 years older than me and they were the same age. And Dottie was the one that his mom wanted him to marry. And we were dating and we were kind of fooling around. And it was very clear that this was a thing that was like, I was like, wait a second, I can't be essentially your side piece. Like, this is not going to work for me. And so you need to make a decision. And there was this guy who kept coming into the nightclub over and over again and asking her out all the time. And so one day, to stick it to my grandfather, she decides that, yes, she will go on this date with this guy. And so he takes her to this fancy place in Boston. They have drinks. They go dancing. She gets this picture drawn. And that night, she says, I don't like this guy. I'm in love with Ray. I'm going to go back and I'm going to fight for this thing. I'm going to tell him to make a decision. And so not only is this a beautiful picture, it is a picture that is attached to this story. And that is what gives it this meaning, that this is a souvenir of the night that my grandmother decided, you know what, screw this. Why am I on, you know, this date with this dude I have no interest in when the guy that I love is down there and I'm going to try to make this work. And yes, the house was filled with cool things and like, you know, fun old gadgets and fun, you know, old timey stuff. But the things that I kept and treasured are the ones that are tied to stories.
Yes.
And I think that's ultimately what I try to do with the Memory Palace.
We're going to take a quick break, but after this, Nate is bringing us off the beaten path at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. We are going past the famous paintings, into the back hallways, and to a semi-hidden room where Nate loves to find inspiration. And it's a storage room.
This was like America's attic. This like uncurated kind of like chaos of American life was right there.
That's after this.
Autograph Collection Hotels offers over 300 independent hotels around the world. each exactly like nothing else. Hand-selected for their inherent craft, each hotel tells its own unique story through distinctive design and immersive experiences, from medieval falconry to volcanic wine tasting. Autograph Collection is part of the Marriott Bonvoy portfolio of over 30 hotel brands around the world. Find the unforgettable at autographcollection.com.
Is it a stay in or a go out kind of Friday night? The choice is yours. Find the detail that moves you with 3x points on dining, including takeout from Chase Sapphire Reserve. Learn more at chase.com/Sapphire Reserve.
Cards issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hey, Dylan here with a very small ask. If you're a fan of the show and you enjoy what we make, please take a moment to rate and review it. This is slightly embarrassing, but I definitely do go look at the reviews somewhat frequently. And every kind note or thoughtful piece of feedback there is just it's a reminder to me and the entire team that all the work we put in is worthwhile. And it sends a message to the platforms that people are enjoying the show. So if you can, take a moment, rate and review. We will see them and we take them seriously. Thank you.
Nate found himself looking back in time more and more, and his interest in the past deepened after a day visiting New York City with an old buddy.
One day when I was in my mid-20s, I drove from that house in Providence and visited a friend from high school who was living in Greenpoint in Brooklyn. And we took a walk, and we walked from his place. We walked over the Williamsburg Bridge, and we walked, you know, much of the length of Manhattan, and we wound up at the Met, the Metropolitan Museum in the Upper East Side. So we walked around, and there are like giants of American art. There are like, you know, landscapes by, you know, Bierstadt and Church, and there, you know, there's Washington crossing the Delaware, and there's Madame X by John Singer Sargent, and all the,
it's a good one.
Exactly, it's a good one. But in the kind of belly of this wing, there is this room that I'd never been before. And like the next time I went, I could not find. It is that sort of like obscure and hidden. It is this large L-shaped room.
It might not exist.
Yes, in your mind. Yes, exactly. It's Club Baghdad-like in that way. And so, you know, there's this large L-shaped room that is called Visual Storage. And in it is row after row of floor-to-ceiling display case. Just case after case after case after case. And you know, even though it's all, I'm sure, curated into an inch of its life, what it essentially is it's kind of like they have all this extra stuff and they don't have any place to put it.
Yeah.
There are these landscapes by lesser landscape painters. There are, you know, mantles that used to be on people's fireplaces. There are, you know, little figurines at a time when people thought little figurines were cool. And there are, you know, portraits of people who were once prominent, but you've never heard of before in your life. And I found that room on that day so powerfully overwhelming. This was like America's attic. Like, you know, this was just the sort of like uncurated kind of like chaos of American life was right there. It was not just American art. It was like American life. Like that these are the chairs that not only did people sit on that, this was a chair maker's life for 3.5 weeks. Or look at these weird collection of steins that were like treasured and you know, collected and labored over and loved and like purchased at great expense and then like held in the place of honor, you know, that like I guarantee the next generation, the people who had to clean out that person's attic when they died was just like, what's the deal with all these signs? And that is that, you know, in that moment and to this day, like to me, that is life, you know, like that is the same way that like, you know, that one generation cannot expect the generation coming up behind them to, you know, care at all about the music that they like or to value their celebrities or, you know, to maybe even value their most dearly held principles that they held for that summer back in 1969 or whatever it turns out to be. Like that is life.
The Met actually ended up being a really important place in Nate's life and career. From 2016 to 2017, Nate was invited to be the artist in residence at the Met, and he created 8 episodes of the Memory Palace inspired by objects in the collection. And one of them is this really cool narrative guided tour of visual storage.
I can find no better metaphor for what I try to do in the Memory Palace, and specifically in this book of Memory Palace stories, than visual storage. Because, you know, like, I really do think that, like, people ask me where stories come from, and the truth is they come from, like, anywhere and everywhere, in part because, like, there's just no shortage. Like, you can look back, you know, into history, and there's a lot of it. And boy, there are, you know, there are a million stories and a million people. What I am doing, you know, with these stories is the same thing that, like, a curator might be doing in these shelves, which is finding the small figurine, finding the painting, and bringing it to you, the reader, or you, the listener, and saying, look at this one.
Shall we go to the final room and personal Memory Palace? I love this room. I've been in this room. It's the collection of glass flowers at the Harvard Museum of Natural History.
Sure. There's this collection of glass flowers that are in glass cases that were done in the 19th century by these two Bavarian glass-blowing geniuses. These men spent decades of their lives creating these models specifically for study, you know, at some scientific institute in Germany. And they are not merely flowers of unbelievable beauty and verisimilitude. You know, they're not just like, boy, that's a hell of an orchid that these guys managed to make and color match and all this stuff. Because they're specifically for scientific study, they are also all the parts of that. There's like a little thing that will just be labeled stamen or stem or seed pod. And those seed pods will be rendered with incredible discipline and incredible specificity and in stunning artistry. And that alone is worth seeing.
I'll just cut in quickly here and say, if the phrase glass flowers makes you think of like a crappy vase at the bottom shelf of a TJ Maxx or something, I swear that is not what these flowers look like. They are so lifelike that it's almost kind of eerie. They look more like the silk flowers you'd buy at a craft store, but they are made of super thin, expertly molded glass. And some of these flowers are in full bloom, and some of them are actually in various stages of decay. And so they're beautiful and sometimes gnarly and very, very cool.
I can think of almost no better way of understanding the idea that our moments are historical. Because here is this way, this need that scientists had to look at these flowers that they would only have for another, you know, 20, 30 years when photography would be better, you know, and that you could have color photographs with this thing, or that refrigeration would be better so the African violet could be preserved, or that, you know, greenhouse technology could be better so that they could grow it themselves, or whatever it turns out to be. This is a temporary thing that has been made, that has been passed down permanently. But it is also the work of these impossibly gifted artists, that these impossibly skilled men with, you know, off the charts fine motor skills and you know, like three-dimensional, you know, modeling that they could accomplish in their heads, that this is how they spent their lives. This is the art that they pursued for all of this time. And there's simply no way it wouldn't have been different in a different era, that they would not have done different things, that they would not. But this is what they could make. And the notion that they have made these representations of these impermanent things, of flowers in bloom, or plants in decay, or plants or flowers before they open up, you know, there's nothing that, you know, articulates the wonder and strangeness of like living through time quite as well as those flowers.
It kind of reminds me of what we were talking about with the visible storage, where, like, you know, there are these piles and piles of landscape paintings of the Hudson that are deemed at this moment in time to not be the one that we want to have out in the gallery. But people's priorities and interests change over time. And that's also kind of a beautiful thing too, where maybe these flowers were originally made for a specific purpose, but today we can appreciate them for another reason. I think that's something I also really appreciate about your show, is that I feel like you're plucking stories of people who were not given the ink or the due in their time. Perhaps they're not, you know, the centerpieces of the historical models or something.
Sure.
But they, you know, as time goes on, we have different priorities and different interests in the stories that we're looking
for. Right. And no, it's exactly right. And I do think that like, you know, it's like a question worth asking is like, why remember anything at all? Right. And it's essentially because the answer is like, because I want to, because in this story, I find beauty in this person's, you know, parenting journey. I find some lesson for myself in the way that the Ferris wheel was a terrifying thrill ride for its first couple of years. And now, you know, it's just a Ferris wheel. You know, that this is the most absurd thing to say, but it's just true. It's just that like people are beautiful and like life is just odd and we are all just sort of figuring it out. I just find it valuable to remember how sort of like kind of arbitrary that our time is and how arbitrary their time is, but yet look what they made of it and look what we still can of ours.
Nate DeMayo, thank you so much. The new book is The Memory Palace, also the name of the show, which I'm sure everyone listening to knows and loves. It's such a great show, and it's lovely to talk to you. Nate DeMayo, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Total pleasure.
We've been talking with Nate DeMayo. He is the host and creator of the Memory Palace podcast, and he has a brand new book called The Memory Palace, True Short Stories of the Past. Check it out now. And we will link to the Memory Palace podcast as well as the episodes from the Met that we mentioned in the episode description. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. The people who make our show include Dylan Thuris, Doug Baldinger, Chris Naka, Camille Stanley, Johanna Mayer, Manolo Morales, Baudelaire, Gabby Gladney, Alexa Lim, Casey Holford, and Luz Fleming. Our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tindall. And if you like our show, give us a good review and rating wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to follow us so you never miss an episode. I'm Amanda McGowan, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I'll see you next time.
Hold up. Hear that? It could be the sound of your phone dinging every time you sell a product with TikTok ads this holiday season. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. But you have to start now. So head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/holiday24 and drive more holiday sales today.
After a long week, are you going out or staying in? With Chase Sapphire Reserve, you earn 3x points on dining either way. You can meet up with friends to share tapas and sangria, or have a cozy night in to order a curry bowl and watch a movie. No matter what you pick, it's a win. Find the detail that moves you with 3x points on dining, including takeout, from Sapphire Reserve. Chase, make more of what's yours. Learn more at chase.com/sapphire reserve.
Cards issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.